The Big Ten, we find values that last for a long, long time. In fact, they're the values that are the foundation of the entire Western civilization. That's how our entire judicial, our legal system has been built on. The Ten Commandments are about the only thing that Jews, Muslims, and Christians agree on. All three religions accept the Ten Commandments as commandments from God. But today there's an effort in our nation to eliminate the Ten Commandments, to remove the Ten Commandments from our daily lives and from our nation. But God tells us in Deuteronomy chapter 6, never forget these commands that I've given you. Teach these to your children. Parents, I got to tell you what. It's an important verse right there. Teach these to your children. Now, I realize why some of you have not taught those to your children, because you forgot what they were. So over the next several weeks, we're going to reacquaint you with the Ten Commandments. And you're going to learn how they can make a difference in your life, in your family, and even in your nation. I believe that one pastor standing here speaking about the Ten Commandments won't change a thing. But I also believe that God has probably put the same message into the head and the hearts of many, many pastors across the nations. Why did he give us the Ten Commandments? Well, let me tell you, first of all, he did not give them to make your life miserable. That's not why he gave the Ten Commandments. Not to punish you, but to protect you. See, God has lined up this entire universe with what we call universal laws. There's certain physical laws that operate, that the universe operates on, like the law of gravity. If you choose to ignore the law of gravity, you can do so. But you're in big trouble. If you climb on top of this building and jump off, you choose to break the law of gravity. Let me tell you what, you only break God's law once of gravity, and then the law breaks you. There's also scriptural laws and spiritual laws, and they are the tracks on which our trains are to run on. They are not the 10 suggestions, they are the 10 commandments. They're not optional. God says, you do these things, and things will go fine in your life. You don't do these things, and you're in big trouble. The 10 commandments, the first four commandments deal with God. The last six deal with us, how we deal with each other. I want to begin today with the foundation. We're going to look at the foundation for being a strong person, and it's found in the very first commandment. And the Ten Commandments are not haphazard. They're not just thrown together. God intentionally put this first one first because it's the most important of all the Ten Commandments. The first commandment sets the entire tone, the foundation for the other nine. It says, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall have no other gods before me. We're not going to get into arguments today about what are gods, but let me tell you what, anything that you have can be and is a god. It could be tennis, it could be golf, it could be hobbies, it could be work, it could be families, it could be whatever you want. It is a god. Understand that it is a god. And there's nothing wrong with it being a god. The principle is put God first. First in my life, first in my family, first in my community. God says, I demand top priority in your life. He said, I am not going to play second fiddle to anyone or anything. And you know what? He deserves to be number one. He deserves to be number one in my life. Why? Because he made me. In fact, everything I have in life is because God has decided to give it to me. So what does it mean to have no other gods before me? People come and say, Ted, I thought you said there was only one God. Well, there is only one capital G God. But there's a whole lot of little g gods. He's talking about little gods. So what is a god? A god is anything that dominates your life. Anything that controls your life. Can a career be a god? Yeah. Can another person be a god? Yes, it can. Can a sport be a god? Yes, it can. Even good things that God has created for us to enjoy through this life can become gods. God says this. He said, I deserve first place in your life. That's the foundation of all of this. If he is not first place in your life, then the other nine commandments aren't going to mean anything. See, when you build a house, the most important part of that house is the foundation. It's something that nobody ever sees. It's kind of maybe even the ugliest part of the house. But it's the foundation. And this is the foundation of the Ten Commandments, which are the foundation of America. Today in America, families are dropping like flies. They're falling apart faster than we can put them together. It is amazing to me when I do services for some funeral services and wedding services. And I used to have the bride's name and the groom's name. And now I got to have the bride's name plus 17 other names that she's known by. Why are so many marriages falling apart? Because they're built on the wrong foundation. Love is not a good reason to get married. Let me tell you right now, it is a lousy reason to get married. Good looks is even a worse reason. Even a worse reason. If your wife married you for good looks, you're in big trouble, man, because you don't look good anymore. It doesn't matter how much money you put into it. It doesn't matter how much work you put into it. It is not going to last unless you build it from the beginning on the right foundation. See, every time God gives a principle, he gives us a promise. And here's the promise. He says, in everything you do, put God first, and he will direct you and crown your efforts with success. That's a great promise. I was talking about the 7,000 promises. There's one of the greatest ones. Everything you do, you'll be successful at. Whatever you want God to bless, what does that mean? You put him first. You put him first. The divorce rate in America is now one out of every three marriages. This is about 3 years ago I did this study, so it may have even gone up. But there's a Harvard University did a study on that. And it said that marriages where the wedding is at a church service, instead of being one out of every three, it's one out of every 50. And in marriages where they're married in a Christian ceremony, and where they go to church every week and read the Bible and pray together, the divorce rate is one out of every 1,105 marriages. That's a lot better than one out of three, isn't it? Whole lot better. You want to know how to divorce-proof your marriage? Put God first. Put God first in your marriage, in your family, and you'll see tremendous benefits. So the question is, how do we put God first? I mean, how do we do it? Well, I'm going to make it real easy, and I'm going to use a little acronym there called FIRST. Easy to remember. It's on the back of your bulletins. So we need to start with the most difficult one first, and that is finances. Oh, I wanted to get this one out of the way right away. Proverbs 3, 9 through 10 says, honor the Lord by giving him the first part of all your income, and he will fill your barns to overflow. I got to tell you, that is one verse there that 99.9% of the Christians do not believe. They don't believe that. They simply do not believe that. God says, give me the first part, and I'll bless all the rest. God has said that money is the number one test of my priority and of your priorities. We spend most of our lives trying to earn it, the rest of our lives trying to save it, and our wives spend all their lives trying to spend it. God says that your checkbook, people say, well, I want to know what my standing with God. I want to know how good a Christian I'm. I'll tell you right now, your checkbook says it all. If I were to ask you right now to take your checkbooks out of your wallet and hand them to the person next to you, let them examine it. What would that reveal about your priorities in life? See, by simply looking at how we spend our money, a person is able to tell a whole lot about our lives. And that's why we don't want to let them see it, isn't it? Deuteronomy 14:23 says, the purpose of the tithing is to teach you to put God first in your life. A lot of people have the idea that the purpose of tithing is so that God can pay the bills. Wrong. God said the first 10% of all I have goes back to him. That's in our money, that's in our time, that's in our talent, that's in our treasure. And why does he do that? He's simply trying to teach us to put him first. You know, we're in tough economic times right now. And we have many people in our congregation and many people all over the country and even the world that send me emails. And they're out of work and they're asking for prayer. And I don't know any clearer, simpler advice to give you right now if you're in financial trouble. Let me give you the advice that I will die on. Give to God. Give to God. You don't need to write a check to Lake Telling Bible Church. Let me tell you what. God has supplied for this church without people for a long time. You need to do it for you. Give it to a missionary. Give it to whoever you want to give it to. You say, oh, Ted's trying to get my money. I don't want your money. Give it to somebody else. That's fine. But get the blessing that God has for you. Some of you have sat here for years and years and years, and you squeeze out a dollar every once in a while, and you say, "Oh, Ted, I don't know why things are so bad in my life." I'll tell you why. Because you will not trust God. You refuse to trust God. You're in a financial mess, and you want to think God put you there. He did not put you there. He gave you the way out. You just refuse to do it. Whatever you want God to bless, put him first in it. Why is tithing so important? God said that if I'm not tithing, then I'm proving that he's not really first in my life. So when should I tithe? 1 Corinthians 16:2 tells us, on the very first day of every week, I give him 10% of money on the first day of the week to show him what? That he's first in my life. If you put me first, he says, I'll direct you and crown your efforts with success. Why does he say tithe on Sunday? Because men and women, unbelievable as it sounds, tithing and giving is a form of worship. So we do it on Sunday when we worship God. Tithing is an act of worship, so we do it when we worship. We're moving past the finances. Now we're going to move on to the interest. Number two, the I is the interest. If God is really going to be number one, then I need to put him first in my finances, and then I need to put him first in my interest. That means in my fun times, my play times, my amusements, my recreation, my hobbies, my sports, my whatever it happens to be. 1 Corinthians 10:31, whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Does that include going on vacation? Yeah, it does. I don't know how many times you go on vacation, but if you're on vacation on a Sunday, you should find a church somewhere to go to church. Oh, I might not like it. So what? It's only one day. So, but they might not like me. Well, so what? It's only one day. I'll never see you again. Can you eat for the glory of God? You sure can. Can you play golf for the glory of God? Yes, you can. Can you go sailing for the glory of God? Yes, you can collect stamps to the glory of God. How do you do that? How do you collect stamps to the glory of God? How do you play golf to the glory of God? How do you sail a boat to the glory of God? In everything you do, you put God first. You do it with an attitude of gratitude. If you're out playing tennis, you say, Lord, thank you for the arms you gave me to play tennis with. Thank you for the hand-eye coordination that works sometimes. Instead of praying before you hit the ball, try thanking God after you hit the ball. Everything you do, do with an attitude of gratitude. You like to make crafts? You enjoy the gifts and abilities he's given you? Do it with a grateful heart. Put him first. See, you can tell where a person's priorities are in life. You can tell where God is in life. What gets you excited? What's important to you? You know, when I go to a Raiders game, I get excited. I jump up and down and yell. And they call me a fan. I do that in church and they call me a fanatic. Why? What's wrong? Another thing is, what do you talk about the most when you're with people? I know people who can talk for hours on end about somebody else in town. You know some people like that? Some of you are people like that, aren't you? You can talk about people's lives. You can talk about what they do. You can talk about their husband, their wives, their sisters. You can talk about all those things, but you can't spend 2 minutes talking about the one who saved your soul. Why is that? Ephesians 5:19 says, talk with each other much about the Lord. It's amazing to me how many Christians cannot repeat the name Jesus outside of these doors. If he's first in your life, then he'll be first in your conversations too. You won't be ashamed. Number three, the R is relationships. Relationships. So we looked at finance, we looked at interest, and now we're moving to relationships. If you want God to be first in your life, you're going to have to choose your friends carefully. Get that. Choose your friends carefully. Proverbs 27:19 says, what a man is really like is shown by the kind of friend he chooses. Why is that? Why does who I deal with have to do with putting God first in my life? Because you become like the people you spend the most time with. If you spend time with people who take God lightly, if you spend time with people who are casual believers, you will become a casual believer yourself. But if you associate yourself and you spend yourself time with committed Christians, they will make you stronger. Whoever you spend your time with, that's who you're going to become like. Those of you that are parents right now, let me ask, what kind of people are you exposing your children to? Who are you inviting into your home? See, if you're serious, if you're truly serious about building strong values in your kids, you should be inviting people over to your house from this church. That's who you should be having come up. People who model the kind of behavior that you want your children to model. People who you'll have no problem with talking about God in front of your children with. But if you don't provide them with those kind of role models, where are they going to get it from? TV. That's where they're going to get it. Let me tell you right now. They're going to get it from television. Television is the worst babysitter you can find. Talk about child abuse. That's it. What your kids need to see is people who love God. That's why you need to get involved in a Bible study and then invite those people over. You already know what they like to eat. Proverbs 12:26, that a righteous man is careful about his friendships. He's cautious. The truth is, if you really want God first in your life, there are some relationships that you might have now that are dead wrong. I've seen so many times when dynamic Christians just get swept away. You know, it's easier to pull somebody down than it is to lift somebody up. Put God first in your relationships. Number four, put God first in your schedule. Is he first in your schedule right now? Is he even in your schedule? Ephesians 5:16-17 says, make the most of your time, grasp firmly what you know to be the will of God. Do you know what the will of God is? The will of God is to have a relationship with you. That's what the will of God. People all say, what's the will of God? I want to know what the will. That's the will of God. Have a relationship with you. He will then teach you your next step. How do I put God first in my schedule? I ask him to help me to use my time wisely. So you get up in the morning and you make a to-do list. How many of you make to-do lists every day? Go ahead, raise your hand. 2, 3, 4. Yeah. You really need to get up in the morning and make a to-do list. And then you need to put the to-do list on the table with a cup of coffee. And you say, okay, God, what do you want me to do with this to-do list? Which of these things do you want me to do? I have 17 things to do today, and I know I don't have the time to do them all. So selection is the name of the game. How do you select? You ask God to select for you. When God made you, and he made me, every single one of us, he had a plan for your life, for your day, for your hours, for your minutes. He has a schedule already set for your day. If you find yourself doing more things in a day than you can possibly do, it is because you are not doing what God has decided for you to do. You're doing what you decided you need to do. They may be good things. They may be great things. They may be blessed things. But you have to understand, if you're tired at the end of the day, it's your fault because you haven't checked with God, because God will never give you more to do than he gives you the strength and time to do it. We love that verse, don't we? Oh, God never give you more than you can handle. Yeah, but you can give yourself more than you can handle, and he will let you do it. We all love the fact that God gives us choice. But he also gives us the choice of making stupid decisions. Make a daily appointment with God. If God is going to be first in your family, make a daily appointment. Just 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You don't need to spend 4.5 hours. 10 or 15 minutes, God will appreciate it. Maybe you get up 10 minutes early. You know, you push the snooze button one less time. That's all it takes. One less time. You don't even have to get out of bed. You can sit in bed, push it and talk. Talk to God. Maybe you get to work 15 minutes early. And you sit in the car and you read the Bible. And you pray with God about all the things you got to do today. What do you want me to do? You just have a quiet time. Maybe at lunchtime. Maybe you take your lunch and you take your sandwich. You just sit under the tree and you talk to God. Or at night after the kids are in bed, you get in the easy chair. And you get yourself a cup of toddy or whatever you're drinking. And you just talk to God. Pray to God. It doesn't matter when you do, but you do need to get him into your schedule. And you need to say, God, let's review my life where I am today. Let's review my schedule, my goals, my priorities. What's really important to me may not be important to you, so I want to know what is important to you. Even Jesus, felt the need for daily prayer and daily time with God. Mark 1:35 says, very early in the morning, Jesus got up and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. See, you and I can get so busy doing things for God that we forget all about God. A verse in Jeremiah says, my people have forgotten me for days on end. If you come to church on Sunday morning and the next time you think of God is next Sunday morning, you just let 7 days go without God, days on end. I would encourage you as a family, when you sit down to eat, hold hands and just say a brief prayer of thanks. A prayer that says, God, we just want to remind ourselves right now that the food came from you in the first place. Pray aloud together as a family. It doesn't have to be this big, long prayer covering everything in the universe, but it's a visual demonstration to your kids that you put God first. It's a demonstration to those people sitting in the restaurant around you that God is first in your lives. All it takes is a little bit of self-control for 30 seconds. Even when you're starving. Even when that food smells so good. Just say, God, you're first in my life. And finally, we get to the T, which is troubles. When you face unexpected problems in your life, when you have pressures in your life, when you have a crisis, who do you turn to? Who is the first one you turn to? Many people, most Christians, when they're in a tight situation, prayer becomes the last resort, not the first option. But God says, turn to me. Turn to me first when you have a problem. But we all have that. Well, I guess there's nothing else left to do but pray. It's all hopeless. I've done everything I can do. My wife's done everything I can do. Everybody's, the bank's done everything I can do. Now I guess all that's left is prayer. Let me tell you what. If you get undercut by a competitor, if you get slammed by your boss, just say, God, help me. He said he's an ever-present help, refuge. Psalm 50:15 says, call upon me in your day of trouble, and I will deliver you, and you will honor me. God says, put me first, even in tough times. Some people get embarrassed. They get embarrassed. They think, oh, you know, I didn't pray for this meal, and now I'm choking, so I better not ask God to save me. No, God's not like that. See, well, I really don't want to bother God. God says, bother me. Bother me. I can handle you. I can handle your problem. Don't carry it by yourself. A real interesting point that I came up with this morning on my way to church is, how do you know when God is really first in your life? I mean, how do you know that? Let me give you one key. Simple. You do not worry anymore. See, when God is first in your life, you stop worrying. Worry is a warning light. Anytime you're worried about anything, it's a warning light that God is not first in that area of your life. If he's not first in your finances, then you're going to worry about him. When God is not first in your relationships, you're going to worry about him. When he's not first in your problems, your trials, you're going to worry about him. When he's not first place in your schedule, you're going to worry about how can I get everything done. But when we stop and do a priority check and say, God, you're number one in this area. You handle it. You're in charge, then you can take a deep breath, you can relax, and you can stop worrying. Matthew 6:33 tells us, seek first the kingdom of God, and all these other things will be added unto you. Jesus, right in the middle of a sermon on worry, read it, Matthew 6, a sermon on worry, right in the middle of it, he says, seek first the kingdom of God. Put God first. Why? Because it's the antidote to worry. As we get ready to close today's message, I just want to say that if you want a successful family and you want a successful life and you want to see a successful nation, you've got to have the right foundation. I want to build a strong family with the right foundation. I want God to be first in my finances. I want to be first in my interests, first in my relationship, first in my schedule, first in my troubles. I believe that if I follow that principle, he will keep his promise to make my life, my family, my church, my community, and my nation successful. I'm just saying that we need to stand tall with Joshua. As Joshua said in Joshua 24:15, as for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. Can we bring our nation back to the nation that our founding fathers fought and died for? Yeah, we can, but it's going to take more than just change. It's going to take a U-turn. It's going to take every single man, woman, and Christian to turn back to where God started, humbling ourselves, seeking his face, praying for his will, and he promises that he will hear from heaven and he will heal our land.
Your hand on his Bible when you swear to tell the truth. His name is on our greatest monument and our money too. And when we pledge allegiance, there's no doubt where we stand. There's no separation. We're one nation under him. In God we still trust, here in America, he's the one to turn to, and every time the going gets rough, he is the source of all our strength, the one who watches over us, here in America. The going gets rough. He is the source of all our strength. The one who watches over us. Here in America, in God we still trust. Here in America, here in America. In God we still trust. Here in America. In God we still trust.